Yeah, okay, I'll wait for you. We're going to call on Barry right now, and he is going to talk to us. And he's also, these are his notes. Now, for many of us,
is that okay?
We would just see a blank piece of paper or holes in it. And on the main side, you see these little dots. I can remember Barry reading scripture on a Sunday morning a number of years ago. A beautiful reader. And what I was watching, most of us will watch the face and the lips. I found myself watching his hand as his hand was going across the paper, and these dots represent letters, words, etc. So he pulled that out and said, "These are my notes." I thought, well, don't get sick because I won't be able to read. And then he brought some of the technical things that he uses, iPad, etc., etc. He's going to show those to you as well. But we're going to call him Barry now. Barry.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And Merv just put his his telephone on your stand.
All right.
So he can record you.
Okay, yeah.
Your notes?
Yeah, got them, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Well, hopefully. Well, it's great to be here and have so many people come out and listen to my life story type thing. So we'll start. I was born in Regina in 1953, and as John mentioned, I was born prematurely, like I was born before some weeks or months before I should have been. I weighed about 2 pounds when I was born, so I was fortunate that I was able to, you know, I guess God must have been looking on even then, because I pulled through, and other than being visually impaired, I all my other senses and everything are okay. And this problem with the oxygen that we were talking about when I was getting too much of it was, this occurred with a lot of people that were born premature in the 40s and the 50s and the early 60s in the Western world. So it was not until later that they discovered, you know, that they couldn't give you 100% oxygen over, you know, an extended period of time. That in doing that, it would either damage your eyes or the optic nerves or whatever. And I went to school. I went to school at the W. Ross McDonald School in Brantford, Ontario, which was for the visually impaired. The reason for that was that a lot of the schools in the other provinces didn't have facilities to teach us. They didn't have people to do Braille and a lot of them didn't want to maybe take the responsibility of having someone in a building and possibly falling down the stairs or doing things like that. At that time, kind of the service wasn't developed, and you would go to a school for the visually impaired type thing to learn. We did learn Braille when I was there. That's one of the first things we learned. And you would first learn, what we did was, we would, to get your fingers accustomed to feeling things, you would feel maybe different material shapes, like a circle and a square, and you would remember what those were, and you would learn what those were. And you would feel materials that were rough or smooth and just different textures. And from there, you gradually learned the Braille system and the alphabet. And I should talk a little bit about that, because some people might not know. It's a Braille cell. It consists of six dots in it. There are six dots. Three can be three on the left side, three on the right side. And different combinations of these dots, whether two or three or one or four, five or six, represent different letters of the alphabet or different contractions, like you would have in print for shorthand. And, you know, so often, so it means that you don't have to write each letter out, and you have contractions and things and little shortcuts, and then it cuts down the amount of paper, etc., and the space needed for textbooks and things as well. For example, I have the King James Bible at home, and there are, I didn't bring one along today, but there are 18 volumes of Braille in that, and they're about 1 to 2 inches thick and about 11 by 11 size paper. So, you know, it's not something you can carry and take with you, but I often would bring a volume to church or that type of thing. And so another thing that was traumatic, I guess, was leaving home and not realizing how far Brantford, Ontario was away from Regina. So that was quite an ordeal, you know, quite a trying time type. And I think for my parents too. And so that was, you were a long way from home. And we gradually, you know, I would get friends that I had, you know, when you were in school, you would meet other students and become friends and that. And so yes, that was, we would come home at summertime and we would see our parents and at Christmas time. But other than that, we were away from home quite a bit. And fortunately, my dad, I must commend him, he learned Braille, and he actually learned it and would write to me in Braille letters and things. And there weren't too many students' parents that did that. So that was quite something. He said, well, you learned it, I can learn it. And he did. So I attended there from 1959 up till 71. I took 12 years of education. And at that time, Ontario had, they had grade 13 at that time, and what we took in Saskatchewan and Alberta and other provinces in 12 years, they would take in 13. So I took 12 years there, and then I went to Central Collegiate in the city, and it's no longer around, but it was then, and I took some classes to fulfill my, so that I could get my grade 12 certificate for Saskatchewan here. I should also just mention too that we had some textbooks that were brailled. Sometimes we had books put onto tape and teachers would read to us. So it was a lot of listening and a lot of learning involved. But, you know, with the help of a lot of people, I got through school and got through my year of education here. I kind of want to deal next with how I got to know the Lord and how I became a Christian. And we talk about God working in our lives. Well, I think he must have been working. He was working behind the scenes, and I didn't even know about it. But the way this happened was I was in grade 10, and we in residence, you would have either two people to a room or four people to a room. So you had roommates. And I had a friend named Peter Watt. We were good friends at the time. We liked the same music, liked to do the same things. We were roommates for a couple of months. And then some of the counselors said, well, we want to switch some of the people around. And I thought, well, okay, why would that be? So there was another student named Michael Locke that was going to be my new roommate. I thought, why him? He had almost, you might call, maybe was kind of like a bully. He kind of would put people down, and he was an A student, but everyone knew it. He was one of these type of people that you didn't really want to be around. At least he was, certainly wasn't friends with me, and you know, and that type of thing. But I noticed that when, we were together, and you were kind of walking on eggshells because you didn't know what to say, and this type of thing. But I noticed he seemed to be very different in the first few weeks we were together, and he seemed to be not like he had been before. And I thought, well, why is this? And you know, very, very kind and all this. And then one day he said to me, well, I'm taking this correspondence course from Back to the Bible broadcast. And would you like to listen to it? And it was a tape done by, I think it was done by Theodore Epp. And it's called The Bible and You. And, well, we listened to it together. And, of course, it talked about our need for salvation, our need for a Savior. And I had attended church, like, for years. I went to the United Church in Bradford, and we attended, but they didn't really discuss salvation and those types of things too much. So this course was quite, this tape was quite an eye-opening thing, and I just felt that, you know, I guess that, you know, life seemed, I don't know, just to realize that, you know, we're not self-sufficient on our own. We need someone who's stronger than us, and someone who loves us. And, well, one thing led to another, and eventually both Michael and I got down and prayed, and God came into my heart. So he was working then, and, you know, I didn't even know about it, but he works behind the scenes, right? And Michael, this other student, he was Catholic and as well. So, you know, we weren't the same, going to the same church, but I noticed that he was such a changed student, and he was, you know, for the rest of the time that I knew him. And fortunately, he passed away maybe about 5 years after school. He had a brain tumor, and that's unfortunate. But I just saw what he was like, and I thought, wow, you know, people can change, right? And so that was quite something. I'm going to talk a little bit now about, you know, that was one experience where God was right there. And we'll talk about, and then sorry about this being a bit disjointed, but I went then after I had gone to Central Collegiate here, I went to U of R, to University of Regina, and got a degree in psychology and sociology. I was hoping to get into social work eventually, but that didn't really work out. But it was quite an experience being in a large university. Our school in Ontario, we had 200 students all together, and maybe 10 to 12 people in a class, so very small. And at the Central Collegiate, I don't know just how many students. They may have had 400 or 300, 400, but still reasonably small classes. Well, in university, I remember the first class I went. It was a first year sociology class. There were 280 students in it. I didn't know anybody. Like, I did, at least I didn't think I did. But interestingly enough, a fellow from, a student from, that had been at Central with me, the first day came and sat down beside me. And I was never so glad to see someone that I actually knew. Because, you know, so this university, yes, was quite a challenge, because you had to get around campus, either with help or by yourself sometimes, and taking notes and listening to lectures and reading and doing all the studying, etc. When I was in school in Ontario and in high school, teachers really pushed you to get your work done. Like, they were on your case. Well, when you went to university, that's not the case. Like, the profs, they don't have the time for that. And so, you know, it's kind of up to you to get do your studying and all this type of things on your own type thing. And I kind of didn't want to, but I thought I better tell all my teachers that I did have a visual impairment, so that they would know if they're putting stuff on the board to read it out, and just for doing exams and how we would, I used to do my assignments and exams. I used to usually have to type them most of the time, because, well, of course, the teachers didn't know Braille. And so, you know, it's not like these days. You have a computer, and you can, at least with us, we have software that it will read out the keys you're typing. Well, when I was going to school, we used a regular typewriter, a manual typewriter, and you just hoped that you didn't make too many mistakes in your paper because there was really no, other than someone reading it, there was really no feedback that you had. So that was always quite a challenge. Just one example of an instructor who really went above and beyond what he had to do. I had to take French because we had to take a language class in university. So I had to do that. Well, I did not have my textbooks in Braille because no one in Saskatchewan knew how to do French Braille type things. So this one instructor I had, he said, well, what I can do, because he had a cassette recorder and I had one, he said, I'll put the grammar lessons and the vocabularies on a tape for you. And he spelled all, they had to spell all the words, right? Because you can speak it, but you've got to know how to spell words when you're writing out answers to questions. So it was really a godsend, you might say, because he spent I don't know how many hours doing every lesson for me. And I didn't have money or anything that I could give him, but I was so grateful that he did that, and he explained a lot of different things and took a lot of extra time, too. Was very helpful that way, and I managed to pass the class and get about 75%, I think, which is good. But that's just one example of an instructor helping me and above and beyond what he had to do. And I thank my parents and people in the Lioness Club in the city and others, because we had most of our books were read onto tape, and we had a lot of volunteer people doing that. And I'm sure sometimes the books weren't the most interesting, but they certainly were very grateful doing it. I then, after university, I was unemployed for a while, but I eventually got a job working in a film processing lab, which was a chromacolor lab on Park Street, and I would get slide film and regular film ready for film processing, and sometimes help with doing even the processing a little bit, putting the film into the different chemical tanks and one thing and another. Now, worked there about 3 years. It maybe wasn't the most interesting job, but it at least helped pay, you know, bills and things. I was living with my parents at the time, but it helped. I could, you know, manage to do that. In 1984, my mom became ill and passed away. And about the same time, I lost my job because the lab went into receivership. And so I was, it did open up again, but I didn't go back to it. And I remember, you know, and then I looked for work and for about 4 or 5 months. And then a job at working for CNIB in one of their tuck shops, cater plan stores came up. So this was at Sask Wheatpool, so I did take the job. And very fortunate that I worked for CNIB for 2 years, and then they kind of were getting out of that business. So I was very fortunate that people at Viterra and Sask Wheatpool were willing to hire me as an employee, and I continued to operate the business for them. But I want to go back a little bit and just talk about, well, how did I get involved with First Baptist Church? And this is another thing where God was working behind the scenes, I'm sure. I really hadn't attended church since I left school. I didn't, my parents, they may have believed, but you just didn't know which church to go to and to find people to get you there and one thing and another. So what happened was that I prayed, and it had been after all this happened. I said, well, Lord, I want to find a church or a church family to belong to, but how do I go about doing it? I don't know. Well, During the time I was unemployed, there was a course that CNIB, Canadian National Institute for the Blind, were running, and it was kind of a course to help you towards more independent living. We learned a little bit of cooking and Braille, which I pretty well already knew, but we learned different other, you know, a little bit of cane travel skills and other things. And we, there were four students, and my dad was supposed to drive all of us because the other students were from out of town, came into Regina. And he said, okay, I'll do that, because he was retired, and he said, I don't mind doing that. And then about 2 minutes, not 2 minutes, maybe 2 days before, they said, well, we have someone else that is going to, that is willing to, that he, that needs work and is willing to drive, pick up all of you people. And his name was Dan Sally. And so I got in the car, I think it was the first or the second day, and the other students were there, and we were talking. And all of a sudden, a song by Amy Grant, who is a Christian singer, came onto the radio. And I said, Dan said to me, well, isn't it neat that a regular secular station, I think it was FM 92 or one of those, would play a song by Amy Grant? And I said, well, yeah, she's a Christian singer, and that's something. And I don't know, we got to talking, and I told him, well, I was a Christian. He said, well, I am too. And he said, do you attend a church? And I said, well, no, I kind of am looking for one, but how do we go about it? And he said, well, do you want to come to a Sunday evening service with me? He said, I'll make sure you get there. So yeah, I did. I did come, and I started attending, and really enjoyed the services. Now Dan didn't. I don't know. He didn't continue to attend. He went to another church, I guess. I'm not certain what happened, but there were other people. There was Larry Helmer and his wife Judy that used to attend here. I would go with them, or with Glenn Starry, who was another friend, or Teresa Kelly, another friend, come with them. And I started coming to church, to the First Baptist here, and enjoying it very much. And when John Nelson came to as a minister here, I was talking to Teresa Kelly, and I was with her, and she said, you know, we should join choir. I said, because you seem to be able to sing some of these choruses quite well, And I said, well, I don't know. I did it when I was in Ontario. We did take music, and I learned it, but I said, I don't know about doing this. It's, you know, every week and learning pieces and one thing and another. She said, well, John's right here and we're going up there. So I said, okay, but we talked, and he said, well, come try it out. And I prayed a lot about it, and with the help of a lot of people, you know, then and through the years, and I've been able to continue to do that. And I'm very grateful that, you know, that she kind of came forward with me, because I don't know that I would have done it on my own. I just don't think I would have kind of had the courage to do it. But it's been really excellent. And I also, I guess we should go back a little bit. I worked at Viterra, and of course ran the Cater Plan store, and we would sell soft drinks and candies and different things to the staff, and so that was for me quite an undertaking, because it meant taking responsibility to order things and to keep things in running smoothly and one thing and another. And I had many people there to help me. Judy Grimsrud is one. She read a lot of invoices for me over the years, and even sometimes would be reading a few things, other things that I needed, like maybe instruction manual for a stereo or for something or other. And I'm sure it wasn't the most interesting material, but it certainly helped me, and she was very grateful to do it. And very thankful that I had her assistance, as well as all of the people that were my bosses, and a lot of people that I got to know at work. And in 1993, my father became very ill and had a heart attack and passed away. So I had to move from his house to live with my sister and my two nephews. And that was an adjustment for me and for them, just living in a different house, maybe taking a bit more responsibility with cleaning and dishes and cooking and things like that, and trying to help out as much as I could. I really need to thank the pastors here at that time and members of the congregation, especially Vivian Johnson, who was one that used to drive me back and forth to choir for the first year or so, and until I was able to get the paratransit service to do that type of thing. She was just helpful in me getting in, keeping me going type thing, and just, you know, and there were other people too, but just being able to get into a new situation and to learn new things. There were things like getting to work by myself and getting to a lot of other activities, using a bus, but kind of on your own. My father used to drive me most of the time, and so this was, well, you know, you'd have to learn to do these things yourselves. So a lot of help from people for that. And in 2000, I'm skipping a bit, but I'm going to, 2014, 2013, my sister actually passed away, and I had to move to the condo where I'm living now. And this was, 2013, and so it's been about 3 years. And a lot of help was given to me again. God got me through this, and also people in the church congregation here have been very good to me through all this time, and people from CNIB and my nephews, and there's just so much things that I accomplished with the help of a lot of people. I think I just kind of want to say that everyone thinks, you know, we all think, well, we did this ourselves. Well, no. You know, a lot of the things others helped you learn, and God was also there to help you through things. And I think we really have to give Him thanks and praise when that happens. And just that, you know, we're the people of His pasture and the sheep of His hand, and He's made us. We haven't made ourselves. And I just think I'm guilty too of thinking, oh, well, yes, I did this. And I said, no, you didn't do this on your own. You did this with God, gave you the talent to do this, and I think we have to always be humble in what we do, what you do, because you didn't get this yourself. It was God that gave you all the talents we have. I'm thinking maybe, and also I think maybe we should stop for kind of questions now. If you have some questions, I could maybe show you some of the material that I use for how we do some of the different tasks, if you'd like, or if you have questions. I think we'll leave a little bit of time for that now.
I have a question.
Yes, Bill.
Very impression that color is important to the rest of us, and I wondered if you could ban some of the color.
Well, you know, I'm never having seen colors. What I kind of picture black as being a dark color, red as being a very, very bright and fiery color, and maybe orange too, and white as being a very clean color. And but I don't really know just how that works type thing. But I think that that's kind of the impression I have from what people have kind of told me. And the yellow would be kind of a fairly mild color type thing, and green. But it's more or less just from what you've read or what you've heard or what you've seen, that type of thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Barry.
Yes.
Are you here?
Hiring.
How do you write bail? Like you said, you said that your dad.
What I could do. Yeah, what I can
tell
you.
How do you do it?
Well, you either have a Braille writer that has keys on it, which I couldn't bring, but what I can show you, this is a little, it's a little pocket. It's a guide that you could use to put a 3x5 index card in, and you could, and what it has rows of cells on it, and you have a little a stylus that you use, which I could take out of my other pocket here, and these cells have six, have all the six dots in them, each one. And you just punch the dots you need for each letter type thing. And then it comes through on your page and you read what you've written. So it's Louis Braille, who actually wrote the Braille system, a pretty good designer, I must say. And he got that from, it was basically the French military. They had kind of a system that they could, this was back in the Napoleonic Wars, I guess, and this Louis Braille lost his vision when he was very young. They had some kind of a code, and I don't know how similar it was, but some kind of a way that they could correspond with each other. Because they couldn't use anything where the enemy could see type thing. So he adapted this code. So that people with vision impairments could use it. And that's kind of what we have today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Barry, do you have a Braille typewriter? I noticed you have a large sheet there.
Yeah, I actually used a larger slate than this. It's a slate that would do 8.5 by 11 paper, but this was actually a full size 11 by 11 piece of paper, and that slate kind of works the same as this one does, and it had it has dots on it, and it has that you punch through, and then you read what you've written. Yeah. So yeah, and there is also a machine that has six Braille dots on it, and it's kind of like a somewhat like a typewriter, but not really. But it has an embossing head, and it prints as well, and it's actually much faster. Use it to do documents and other things, and yeah, you can go reasonably quickly with that. Yeah.
Barry, what did you find was your biggest challenge when you had to move onto by yourself?
Well, biggest challenge, I guess, would be, not going to work so much, because I've done that for quite a while, but doing cooking, doing your shopping, paying your bills, keeping your place reasonably clean, although I do have a lady that comes in and assists me with cleaning type thing, and yeah, those type of things, and just being able to manage your place. Kind of doing things you didn't do before, like changing a battery in a smoke detector in the first thing in the morning, which happened to me, and I managed to do it, and cooking without hopefully too many mishaps. Now, I've had a couple, but nothing super major, not realizing that when you make oatmeal porridge that you got to boil the water fully first. And I thought, why aren't these things getting soft, oatmeal getting soft? And I thought, well, you got to boil the water, right? And I thought, oh, but I didn't know this. I thought, you probably put it in when it's fairly warm and it would work. Well, it didn't. But so, and then you realize you've got to have your water quite warm for it to work. So yes, the things like that, I guess, and just even laundry and keeping your clothes in order and just different ordinary things like that. And one thing with the, I guess I could show you maybe if I can find it here. Yeah, you might be interested, for example, what is it here? Yeah, this is what this is, and this is This is what I have here. It's called a banknote reader. And well, what it will do is it will read, if you put a bill into it, it will tell you, and if it works right, it will tell you what this bill is. So, you know, because you have paper money, and now the money does have, they now have Braille on it as well. So this isn't as big a problem as it was before. But I'll just see if I can do this. Just put the money in. This is a 20.
20.
And yeah, it says it's a 20. And it will tell you your different bills so that you know what size of bills you have, right? Like what your coins are not a problem. Your nickels, quarters, dimes, because you can tell them by feel pretty much. But the bills used to be a problem, but now they have Braille dots on the bills. The 20s have three dots, the 10s have two dots, the 5s have one, and the 50s have four. And the 100s, I think, have two, but they're kind of further spaced apart than what they are on the $10 bills. So at one time, this type of reader was very necessary because you'd have to tell your bills apart, right? And it's something that Bank of Canada provides and still does provide, as far as I know, to people that are visually impaired, you know, without charge type thing. And, you know, so.
Barry,
yeah.
I noticed on a Sunday morning, you know every word of the anthem.
Well, usually that is because when John provides the music on disc and practice, I try to listen as hard as I can. And people that are around me too, like Frank and Bill and many of the other people, and Dean and others over the years, try to listen to what they're doing. And I don't know that I'd say I necessarily know every word, but I try to do the best I can, and hopefully we are successful most of the time. But
you mean you learn the melody just from that, from choir practice?
Usually from practice, and from if John has like a copies of the audio music in audio format, like someone singing it, you kind of learn it through that. So melody is probably easier. Like words, I think is really the more challenging, because some of the new hymns and things, you just don't have, you know, I can usually get the melody well enough. It's the words that are sometimes more of the problem, I would say.
And Gary, I have one last question. How
oh, no problem.
How
yeah.
has the computer changed your world and opened things up for you?
I think it has in a lot of ways, because you have access to the internet, you have access to different books and things. I can now read my daily, you know, I can now read the Leader Post because our CNIB, there's a center, it's called the Center for Equitable Library Access. They have a website, and quite a few of the daily papers are on there. So you can read, you know, not everything, but the major headlines and things. That's helped. I could kind of show you a little bit, although I don't have an internet connection, but I can kind of show you how we navigate the iPad a little bit. And now you're thinking, well, it's a touch screen. How is a blind guy going to manage a touch screen? Well, I maybe have to turn this up a bit. Okay, so I'll just...
Passcode field. 0 with 4 values entered.
There, we'll turn this up a bit. Hopefully we don't get distortion on the recording here, but I'm just going to put my... Whoops.
One.
Whoops, where are we?
One.
Okay. So, yeah, so this is... So I'll just... What I'll do is just show you by running my hand along the screen how we can navigate this, because it's quite interesting. So we'll just
FaceTime.
Okay.
Double tap to open. App calendar. Thursday, January 26th.
And any of these.
Double tap to open.
We have
actions available. Maps. Clock. 1:14 p.m. Maps. Double tap to open. Actions of reminders.
Okay.
Double tap to notes. Double tap to open. Videos. Double tap to open. At iTunes Store. App Store. iBooks.
And I'll probably go into settings and show you, because I can do this without the internet. I can show you just kind of how you can navigate a little bit around the screen. So once, like with a sighted person with an iPad or something, what they can do, like a sighted person can just touch on something, right? Because they can see it. And they'll touch on it and they know what it is and it opens. Well, with a person without sight, we have to have pretty well constant contact with the screen. So once we find, say, the app or the whatever thing that we want to open, what you do is double tap anywhere on the screen, and the last thing that your software said, not where your finger is, but the last thing it said, will be opened up, sort of thing. So I've just tapped settings, and I'll just tap anywhere on the screen, and hopefully this is gonna
settings.
Search oh yeah, field. we did open it. Okay.
Double tap to edit.
And then we'll just keep going here, and we'll.
Airplane mode off. Wi-Fi not connected.
Yeah, I'm not button. Connected, but.
Bluetooth on. Notifications. Control center.
We'll go to.
Do not disturb. Selected.
Where are we going?
General. Display and brightness.
General. Just a minute.
About. Software update. Spotlight. General. Multitasking. Button. Oh, multitasking.
Sorry,
multitasking. Button. Handoff. Software up. About. General heading.
We'll go
general,
into
heading.
We'll kind of go into the voiceover settings, which kind of just gives you an idea of how we can
about but multitasking button
not?
Control center do selected display and brightness storage and iCloud selected rotate store background at restriction data time
when I want to do this I can do it today
site accessibility
accessibility that's where you got to go into okay
selected settings
now we're in accessibility thing and.
VoiceOver.
And VoiceOver is the name of our screen access software that Apple has. So, and you can just go.
Zoom off. VoiceOver on.
And we'll go
voice
into
over.
That and just show you.
VoiceOver speaks items on the screen.
Okay.
VoiceOver on. VoiceOver speaks items on the screen. Tap once to select an item.
And then
double tap to activate the selected item. Swipe three fingers to scroll. VoiceOver practice. Speaking rate. Heading. Speaking rate 55% adjustable.
So if I want to change the rate
swipe
of speech,
up or down
you
with
just
one finger to adjust the value.
Take your hand and go
45%, 35%, 45, 55%, 65%, 55%.
So that's kind of where I had it, but no. With the one thing that, interestingly enough, that Apple, for example, and even the Google devices have done, they're mainstream devices, but they have put in software for, you know, people with vision impairments. They've done stuff for the hearing impaired, people who need switch access, like that are in wheelchairs. I must admit that these companies, I mean, people complain about huge companies, but what they've done for us in 4 or 5 years is just excellent. Like, you know, you're able to navigate that. And otherwise, what we had to have, like for a screen reading software with a Windows computer, you would be paying probably $1,000 for a program that would read out your screen on your computer. And Windows now, they're starting to get in on improving their system a bit, but the computer, yeah, it's meant a lot, and I think it's meant a lot for other blind people too to be able to access. And not so much in the employment field, because unfortunately, our rate of unemployment is still pretty high, because there's just a lot of things that people with vision impairments either can't do or they're not trained to do, and it comes down to money and I guess just willingness of employers to, you know, take the chance type things. So it has helped. I'll be honest in saying yes, it has. It's opened up a lot of things, and yeah.
Gary, I want to thank you very much. This has both been very enlightening and very inspiring. And watching you maneuver on this, I feel I have great success if I can figure out how to turn my iPad on.
Right.
Once it's on, I think it's a marvelous instrument.
Oh,
if
yeah.
I only knew how to use it.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Thank you
All
very
good.
Much.
Thank you.
I'll help you. Yeah, right. Yeah, I understand.